where you took your SATs. And I would write them back a letter saying, thank you very much. You know, I'll be there on March 31st, right? Now, and when I went to college, they did a terrible thing to me because I was supposed to be an information science major. And when I transferred as a junior over to the university, they were supposed to have one of the best IS departments in the world. They got together all these big brains, but they built this applied science building, big, beautiful thing, but they built it over big caverns and it sunk. And it was sinking like a foot every hour or so for a while there. So they stuck big things and pumped concrete underneath the whole thing and filled this cave up. But while this was going on, they didn't open the department. So when I got there, there was no thing. And since I got money to go, what they did is they put a trailer next to where the building was going to be with a vac, a big computer, but no electricity. And me and one other guy, which were the grad students, you know, that were transferred, you know, we were supposed to be big brainchilds, sat in this trailer with a candle, right? Because we had to get our money, you know, we had to spend so many hours working, and our job was to go and sit in this trailer and just sit there, right? And eventually they ran wires out there so we could turn the computer on, but we didn't have all these great people we were supposed to learn from, and we didn't know any better. So we kept doing things that you couldn't do. Well, no one had instructed us properly on our limitations. So, well, the first thing we did, as long as we had electricity, we thought, gee, we should have a phone line, so we strung one of those out. And then we started perusing around through things. Mysteriously, one day, the entire library card catalog of the San Jose State University disappeared. Some kind of college prank, they said. Well, not actually. I was just looking to see if they had some books. But I goofed, you know. And then we took that goof and we converted it into something which was first called a worm program and later on is now known as a virus. And we got paid by an agency that shall remain unnamed to do this. And of course, we tested it out on things like the Department of Motor Vehicles. Suddenly, anybody whose name began with BA no longer had any record. No tickets ever. No address either. And we tried all kinds of things because we pretty much had free rein at that point because, you know, if you have a lot of big equipment and people doing crazy things, pretty soon some government agency is going to come along and go, we could use this. Is there some way all these mistakes could be utilized? And they actually were talking about putting what are called at that time worm programs into computer things so that when the Russians stole them, they would go in and eat all the data on everything. And, you know, so that we could make it so their nuclear weapons wouldn't work right. Of course, they never worked right anyway. You know, that every time they'd launch a missile, it would plop somewhere off of Finland into fjords. I mean, the Russians actually misplaced several times atomic submarines. That's a big thing to lose, don't you think? Right? And, you know, they found one laying at the bottom of a fjord off of Finland. And there's one that, you know, that kind of had a little error out in the Pacific Ocean. Howard Hughes built a ship to try and recover it with a big arm on it. And he took an oil thing for drilling oil wells, and he built an arm on this thing and reached down and grabbed a hold of this sub. But when they lifted it up, it broke in half. And I thought, this guy has never tried to pick up a big jelly roll. You know, that's all there is to it. It's bound to have broken half. I mean, it's a nuclear sub. It's not a piece of crepe paper, for God's sake. But, you know, the drilling equipment only had one arm, so they thought, well, if we make the hand thing big enough, then it won't break. Wrong. And, of course, there was nothing in there but a nuclear reactor. And I don't know about you guys. I don't happen to think it's safe to put them in little things and roll around in the ocean. I find nuclear reactors are kind of intense. I mean, it's like, you know, the French were just out there again testing nuclear bombs. Excuse me, they work. Okay? They don't really need to test them, you know. Now in India they tested them, so Pakistan had to test them. I got news for you. They should release the information. The very first test we did in the U.S. at Los Alamos has not stopped. Okay? If you fly over it, look down. And they've got every environmental specialist in the world working on this problem. Because, yeah, it didn't burn the atmosphere off the face of the Earth, which was nice. They weren't sure if it was going to or not. So they tried it. I think these people need to do that decision strategy exercise. But how many of you found that they were distinctly different? Good decisions are really different than bad ones. right? Makes you wonder how you missed that, didn't it? In the future, I want you to pay close attention because, you know, if somebody says, gee, this looks like a really good opportunity, you know? I can go to Palm Springs, walk across hot coals, and dive out of an airplane without a parachute. With somebody who has a parachute, they call it tandem jumping. But they asked me if I wanted to do this. I said, look, I've already jumped with a parachute, and I didn't like it, you know. Excuse me, but the idea of jumping out and not having a parachute while I'm hanging on to some other guy who's supposed to be an expert, this doesn't strike me as something I'm going to do voluntarily, let alone pay money for it. And they said, oh, well, that's nothing. You get to jump off of a telephone pole. And I went, woo, whoopee, you know. Excuse me, but I've already jumped off of a few telephone poles. But I jumped off of them because the electricity had broken. I used to work for the power company. Scary thought, isn't it? You know, the stuff they let me do, it really amazes me, you know, that once you get a reputation, they let you play with everything. When I worked for the military, what fun I had. The toys they gave me, I would never trust me with stuff like that. You know, I mean, I got to try the new landing craft, you know, that we have, a great new landing craft where it goes across the water at about 80 miles an hour, and it holds like 400 men, and it never touches the water. It's a hover thing, and when it hits the beach, it does about 60 miles an hour. Only they only have one guy who can drive it, though, is the problem. The rest of the people just kind of spin in circles. And they said, you know, we wanted to find out if there's something you could do, you know, to find out what's going on here. And so I said, well, where is this thing? And they took me out to this place. And when we got there, I opened up the trunk of my rental car and pulled out a fishing pole. And the guy said, what's that for? And I said, you've never seen one of these? And the guy said, well, it's a fishing pole. And I said, well, we're going out into the ocean. We might as well catch dinner, don't you think? So I got to take this, you know, $20 million thing. And he said, well, I thought you were just going to find out. And I said, Don, I said, I can drive it. Don't worry. So I just took this thing and drove off, you know, into the ocean. And, you know, they said, well, shouldn't we wait? Because they had the pilots and stuff coming down. I said, nah, we'll just take it for a little spin, you know. And it was fun, especially when you hit that beach. Boy, it's really fun. And I don't see what the problem was, but I'm left-handed, as it turns out. They set it up like a helicopter, which is set up for a left-handed person. You know, this is where the control is. It's over here. And most people are so severely right-handed, they can't put their watch on the other wrist. I mean, if you look at somebody and they have their, this arm has a watch on it, 99.999 times, percentage of the time, that person will be left-handed. Because, you know, the other people can't do it, even if they have one that's a Spando one. That watch has got to be on this arm. I like to wear one on either arm because it confuses people. I have different times on them, too. Well, I like to know where I am and where I would be if I were home. Or sometimes I just pick somewhere at random. Because after all, what difference does it make what time it is as long as you're consistent in yourself? You know, I don't like daylight savings. I have no reason to want to save daylight. I don't even approve of it. I'm still pissed off that they don't keep things open all night long because, you know, I mean, it seems to me if they kept everything open and that you could just go to work anytime you wanted. I mean, you know, I mean, it's 24 hours now on the world on the net. Pretty soon they'll get the idea. If everybody doesn't go to work at the same time, there's not going to be a big fucking traffic jam. Right? And they can't get the idea. They go, we must. Now there's somebody who wants to outlaw daylight savings, but that just means we have the traffic jam at a different time. To me, that's not the issue. The issue is we should be able to get used to the fact that it's not so bad in the dark. There's nothing to be afraid of. There are no Indians left. We wiped them all out, and the rest of them are in casinos, you know, wearing Armani suits, and I like it now. You know, they took away every valuable thing, every valuable piece of land. As soon as they discovered oil in Oklahoma, they stole that from them, right? And they gave them the worst piece of anything, and all they had was one loophole. Right? And, you know, and suddenly they turned it into big business. And in California, they just tried to vote it so the Indians couldn't have casinos. They wanted to take it away from them. They don't like the idea that they're feeding each other and building health clinics and dental clinics. Horrible. My big thing I've supported for years is the American Indian College Fund. Because, you know, I love the way they do. They actually take the money and the Indians build schools. And the first thing they built was something that trains dental people and nurses. And then they build clinics on all the reservations. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Like, train people to do things that we need. How many of you, when you went to college, right, didn't get anything that you could practically use except maybe a little sex? I mean, I know, I went to school, you know, and I mean, it's like I kept going into these classes and I kept saying, could we make this a little more relevant? I actually, they tried to stop me from graduating from my BS, which is a good name for a degree if you ask me, because they didn't like the person who I took medieval philosophy from, and so they wanted me to retake the course from someone else, because that person wasn't a reputable philosopher. And I said, now what really difference is it going to make? You know, I mean, medieval philosophy was about the most uninteresting time. What was there, Occam's razor? I mean, you know, how hard does it be for anybody to understand Occam's razor? It's like, well, if you get rid of all the things that are impossible, what's left over must be what it is. I mean, that's not really a difficult concept, except most people don't go along with it. Well, we got rid of everything that's left over, and the only thing that's left is that there must be psychic phenomenon. Nope, can't be. We're just missing something. Let's see. There can't be accessing cues. At least I feel that way. And I've told myself 1,000 times there's nothing to NLP. You know, that's my... I hear this stuff all the time. I love it. And I always like to anchor it and amplify it. I said, so you feel doubt? And they go, yeah. And I go, well, double that feeling. You can really doubt. And they go, oh, yeah, yeah. And I go, now, you're filled with doubt, right? And they go, absolutely. Ooh, see how easy it is to just take their own mind, spin it backwards? Because whenever people are operating without flexibility and don't have a purpose, everything will come back on them. You know, there are people, it doesn't matter what it is, there are people who are absolutely depressed. Right? And I said, I go, well, how do you know you're depressed? And they go, well, I just feel cased in cement. And I go, really? So I walk over and clobber them. Take a big 5-pound maul, run at them. Ah! Take them literally. I don't actually hit them because by the time I'm halfway done, and I'll stop and they'll go, I feel free. I did this with one woman. She'd been in therapy for 16 fucking years. I always have my clients, by the way, total how much they've spent on therapy. Lost work time, how much they've actually put out of their checkbook. Enormous numbers, $160,000. And this was 23 years ago. This woman had spent on shrinks. And, you know, and it got me to raise my rates, I'll tell you that. You know, when you ask for 10 grand, it doesn't sound like so much anymore. And they always go, but you're only seeing me in one session. And I said, well, if you want to wait outside for 5 years, it's okay. I'll wait for 5 years and then take an hour and do it. It just, you can't change people slowly. It doesn't work. People don't change that way. You take a piece of sheet metal and you bend it, it always bends back. But you go like that and it'll stay in that position. And the mind is the same way. As soon as you get the neurocortical pathways, because that's what happens. That's what all that dreaming stuff is about, you know. That's why kids dream all night long, and some adults don't dream anything but the same dream over and over again, where they wake up terrified, you know, and that's because they're unconscious, just enjoy scaring the shit out of them. And when you analyze those dreams or do gestalt dream work, my favorite way to humiliate people, the first time I read gestalt therapy verbatim, I thought it was the funniest thing I'd read in years. I didn't know they actually did this to people. I thought it was a parody. And the psychiatrist had loaned me his house. He'd gone to India to find himself. I tried to tell him he was right there, but he wouldn't listen. He went with a Land Rover and all the stuff. He spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to went to India to find himself, but he wasn't there. And he came back even more depressed. And when he got back, I had been staying in his house, and he had all these lovely books, and I read them, only I couldn't find a point to any of them. And I went, this psychology stuff is so disorganized, there isn't any techniques. It seems like if you go to school, they should teach you to do something. Don't you think? I mean, people that study with me, we teach you this works for phobias. When I go and I do a training, you know, at some mental health clinic, you know, or I had the Louisiana Group and Psychotherapy Association, I had 1,000 people, and I brought up phobics, and there were thousands of pigeons outside the place. So I took people with bird phobias, right? I worked with them for 10 minutes, sent them out, and had them roam around in the birds, come back in. And I said, now, I said, I haven't got a lot of time because I was only going to do a couple of hours and other people were doing things. I said, but here is something you've seen. And I asked, what would you like to be able to do? And they said, do you want to be able to fix phobias, depression, what? And they went, phobias, because it's testable. So I did phobias, and I said, now, I'm going to lay out for you the steps so that you can do this with anybody with a phobia. The hand goes up. Will this work with depression? And I said, no. Now, do you want to learn this? Somebody else raised their hand and goes, well, it worked with insomnia. And I said, it won't even work with idiots. And then I told them my turkey story. I told them, I said, gee, you know, once I was on a turkey farm surrounded by turkeys. Right? And I start going, can you people, do you know what sound a turkey makes? And I had 1,000 people go, one of my fondest memories. Just something about 1,000 psychotherapists going, I have it on videotape. And I said, and here's one of the brilliant audiences I had of all, because you had to be a licensed psychotherapist to be in this group. No paraprofessionals. Right? So every single one of them, some of them even made wings. And I said, that was great. Do that again. And they did. I got them going 15, 20 minutes like that. And then I had them gobble, and I talked over the top of it. And they thought that was spectacular. The people who came with me were thrown out for being disruptive because they were laughing so hard. And they said, this is really important stuff. You should pay attention. If you can't control yourself, just get out. You know, 50 people turning around going, like that. And the people with me going, tears coming out their eyes. And of course, me, I was laughing too, but they didn't count that. But this shrink came into his own house, right? He loaned me, and I was staying there. And he came in, and he walked in, and I was laughing so hard, I had tears. I almost pissed myself, because this stuff, I make you the milkshake. What is your essence is the milkshake? I am cold and creamy. I don't know what the fuck that means, you know. And now I make you your mother as the strawberry milkshake, you know. What is your essence is the straw? You know, I get sucked. I don't know. I mean, it's just bizarre stuff. And I mean, I just thought it was a parody on psychotherapy. And this guy walked in, and he looked at me, and he'd known me for a long time. And he said, it's been really good for you to stay here. He said, you seem to have gotten in touch with things. And, of course, I began to choke back my laughter, and more tears were coming out. And he came up and put his arms around me and said, it's going to be okay. At which point, I collapsed. And I was covering my face because I didn't want to hurt his feelings, but I was just laughing so hard. It was so silly. And I kept pointing to the book, and he picked it up, and he said, I know Fritz Perls. He said, and I'm not surprised this is the kind of stuff that's finally broken through your facade. And I went, facade? What's that? I didn't know you had to have one, right? I guess I hadn't been brought up properly. You know, that's why the first time I was in one of those encounter groups, this guy said, it makes me really uncomfortable that, you know, you're just sitting there staring at us with that look on your face. And I said, okay, motherfucker, outside. And the group facilitator said, no, wait a minute, we don't get violent here. And I said, well, good, I'd rather take you on one at a time. Threw a wheel kick and knocked the guy over. And I said, now you called me out, let's go. And he went, well, I didn't want to fight with you. And I said, then why are you criticizing me? I said, I just got here. I don't know what you people are doing. And he said, well, the look on your face. I said, well, I wasn't thinking about you people. As a matter of fact, I don't even know you people. What I was thinking about was how the fuck I was going to get out of here. I have a date. Right? And he went, really? And I said, really? I said, you know, I said, and he said, you're not making this up. And I said, no. I said, if I was going to make up something, I'd make up something more interesting than that. But right now, I got to go. I got a date. I said, do you want to step outside? I said, or do you want to shut up? And he said, well, you're not mad at me. And I said, yeah. I said, I told you what was going on with me, but still, I haven't seen any reason why you picked on me. And I don't let people pick on me. Shit, the principal of school, when I was only, I don't know, probably, what was I, 9 years old, called me into the office, took a paddle and hit me, and I took it away from him and smacked him on the head 5 times and broke it. And then I broke it in half and made a weapon out of it and chased him. Hey, you know what? I got 2 weeks to vacation for that. So I kept that as a policy. From then on, whenever I was scolded by any public official, I went after him. I figured you got a free vacation. And sometimes you do. Sometimes you get 3 square meals a day and all the basketball you can play. As you can tell, I don't do well in court. I just can't keep my mouth shut, you know. I mean, and I had a judge criticize me one time, and he said, let me tell you something, you long-haired faggot. And I said, wait a minute, you. I'm not the one wearing the dress here. That's not good. That cost me $1,000 in 10 days, although I had a good time during those 10 days. All of my records say constantly, over and over again, has a problem with authority figures. But that's not true. They have a problem with me. And the biggest problem is that every time they tell me that something is impossible, I had a physics professor. He said, energy cannot be created or destroyed. And I said, how do you know that? Because it seems like it can be, because it's here. Well, it turns out he was wrong. It can be. that there's actually more energy being created in every high-speed neutrino reaction. So the first law of thermodynamics bites the dust. By the way, where did these laws come from? You all know about them, even if you don't know what they are. The three laws of thermodynamics. Law number two, everything's getting more random. Richard disproved this at a national conference. Actually, it was an international conference. They were all there. I walked in and I said, I'm not scheduled, but I would like to present a paper here. And I said, actually, I have two or three pieces of paper, but I have an idea that I'd like to tell you about. The law of entropy is absolutely wrong, and I drew all these equations on the board based on the following thing. All the toasters are appearing on this planet. So things are not getting more random. Pretty soon, we're going to have a bunch of people out in space. The first thing they're going to do is organize the asteroid belt by size. You know some visual out there, and he'll be doing it. Then they'll color code them, you know, and then the next thing you know, they'll put Hilton hotels on them. To me, that the one thing they didn't take into account that changes every equation, and we found out, for example, all the laws apply about heat and resistance, but then at a certain time, when it gets to be a certain temperature, then suddenly, they don't apply anymore. There is no resistance. Suddenly, the things that say that Ohm's law, you remember that thing about, you know, it's like the water going through the hose, you increase the pressure. Well, it dissipates an electrical wire as heat, except you can have it go on forever. We've had the same electricity going round and round and round and round in a place in Texas because we have superconductors. As soon as things hit a certain temperature, then we don't get linear change. We get nonlinear change. What changes is not the amount, but all the rules. Now, the force they didn't take into account is consciousness. Seems like a big one to me, right? Because, you know what? The fact that you have to keep people from interfering with experiments means that they can. Now, we found out that there's a funny thing, that when you put 300 people outside of a room, have them meditate on just one thought, that one person inside is going to be able to win at slot machines. They can walk in with the same amount of money as somebody else, and every single time they do the experiment, they not only win, but big. The other people, well, you know, it'd be 1 in 100 times where they'll walk out with a positive cash flow after 2 hours. But the other ones, it's always thousands and thousands of dollars. Now, they want to use this to prove that prayer works, and I think that's a good idea. But we weren't doing it with Christian prayer. We were doing it just by believing it. And to me, whether or not, because I doubt seriously that Christians are right, they ripped off everything. You know, the Jews weren't right. They ripped it off from somebody else, too. They stole it from the Chaldeans. And then there's weird stuff, like, you know, that the Mayans, not the Mayans, but the Incas had batteries. We found them now. They did brain surgery, but they had batteries. They had all kinds of stuff. And like all of these things, the standing stones and, you know, at Stonehenge and Calness, these are big rocks. Now, we have a way that we describe where they could have made them, but maybe gravity is not always the same. Who knows? Maybe at certain times when things are just right, it changes because we cannot account for a lot of the things. Yes, with high-tech stuff, you can go and build another head at Easter Island and drag it across everything and stand it up. But they built hundreds of them. And I'm afraid there just weren't enough people there to do that. There is no explanation for what happened to a lot of things. And there's no explanation for the fact that you can only tell what certain things are if you look at the Earth from outside of the atmosphere. When you do, there's perfectly good pictures drawn. Now, how did the people on the Earth do it? Well, what did they either astro-traveled, right? Oh, well, you know, they did it by working it out. Why would they be doing this? How did it occur to them? Or did someone tell them to do it? And how come it lines up with things you can't see with the human eye? Well, we can either use the fudge factor and make up excuses, or we can open the door to possibilities. We don't have to do anything except believe that what's possible. We started shamanic human engineering some years ago where we've been studying medicine men, just going and finding out what the hell they're doing because they don't seem to have research facilities, but yet they have new information all the time. A guy in the Amazon who was curing people of diseases, and he didn't seem to have any way of experimenting. So I had somebody go. I didn't go myself. I don't like bugs. But I sent somebody down with this radio telephone who's really rich and very stupid. He got bit by snakes. Every fucking thing in the world happened to him. But when he got there and called me on the phone, and he said, oh, he said, you sent me here. And he said, so what do you want me to ask him? And I said, good. I said, ask him, you know, when he has to get something new, when he has a new problem. I said, how does he know what to do? And he told this guy, who then translated to the shaman, and the shaman said he asked the forest. Right? And he said, and he asks the forest. And I said, good. Now, go back and ask him where. And he went, where? And I said, yeah. I said, don't think, just ask him. And he went back, and the guy told him specifically. And then they took him through this forest, and took him days to hike through these horrible things, and went to this place where he stood on the edge of a tree in front of a lake. And they dialed me on the satellite phone and said, well, we're at this place, we're there. And I said, good. I said, now, I want you to go stand there and ask the forest how to get rid of that terrible rash you have. Because he'd been bitching about it. He wanted us to send him stuff. And there's not really like a mail department down there, you know? He just wasn't thinking. I don't know how he thought we were going to get it there. He goes, can't you send me something? And I said, well, maybe we'll do it this way. So he stood there. And the guy's a pretty good artist. But he stood there, and he asked the question. And he asked it in English because he doesn't speak the language. Suddenly, he got a flood of images of plants. And he drew the plants, showed them to the medicine man. The guy nodded, took them, picked these things, mushed them up, put it on his rash, and it went away. Cool, huh? And I said, well, and I thought maybe we should start asking some serious questions, you know. And I thought, because I said, you know, how can we replace Viagra with something cheaper? And what is this nonsense that it's no good for women? Excuse me, that's a big lie. I've read the research. You know, they just don't like the idea of women being able to enjoy sex. And that's what it's about. Right? Because it's always these men writing these things at the end. They go, well, there's no proof that, you know, blah, 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 blah. That, and then they write things like, women don't actually get erections. Excuse me, what women have they been with? You know, that's a comment on their sexual technique, not on anything else. I mean, to me, I think some of these people really need to read some books before they get involved in these things. Maybe we could start things like the medical X-rated channel. If you're going to be a doctor, try using your body. To me, especially if they're going to give advice. I mean, Masters and Johnson's advice to people is really not going to make it so. And did you see that book, The Joyous Sex? Have you ever seen two people look more bored in your entire life? I saw that in the store and I thought, Jesus Christ, I mean, it's like these people, it's like they took their pictures separately and put them together photographically. And they did it when, the first what they did is they took them to the bank, right? And they made them wait in line for 18 hours, right? And then they put them in a trance, took their clothes off, and laid them in this position so that they were just dead, right, like that. And they told them, now wait here. And then they came back like a week later, right, and said, now. And they slid a woman underneath this guy, and he was so bored he didn't even notice. He went, what is that thing down there? I've seen those on the street. What are that? But whatever it is, I don't want anyone to smile, because after all, it's the joy of sex. Bill Schutz wrote a book called Joy. Virginia told me I should go and listen to a lecture of his. I thought it was a parody. I really did. He came and said, today, ladies and gentlemen, I want to talk to you about joy. And I burst out laughing, and everybody looked at me like, excuse me, but it was just too incongruent. If you're going to talk about having fun and you don't sound like it, you know, if you're going to talk about mental health, well, that's okay. I don't believe in it. But on the other hand, if you're going to talk about making the world so that it's wonderful, so it's more ecstatic, so it's more joyful, the place to start, my philosophy goes like this, go first, right? When your life is just zinging with all kinds of good stuff, then help poor people, okay? Because otherwise, we think you're an asshole. I mean, I grew up very poor, and I had so many people try to help me because they said I was maladjusted. And you know what? The more I saw these people come in, the more maladjusted I got. I looked at a counselor one time in high school, and she just pissed me off about how I wasn't living up to my potential. And I said, excuse me, Miss Brown, her name I remember, by the way. I said, you're sitting there at 320 pounds in a polka-dotted dress. I said, at least you should try and wear something that doesn't exaggerate the fact that your desk is nothing but a candy factory, right? And you haven't moved in 3 years. I said, now let me tell you something. I own a nightclub. I was 16 years old. I own a nightclub. I play in a band. And I make more money in an evening than you make in a year. And I still go to school and put up with your horse shit. And I said, now, you're telling me I'm not living up to my potential? Excuse me, I know it's true, but that's because I have to spend 6 hours a day with you fucking idiots. Now, if it's okay, I think I'll go back and be bored somewhere else for a while. Because they took me out of all my college prep classes. They gave me a test, right? And I looked at it and said, this is stupid, and went, marked it off and said, here, I have to go now. And, you know, because my thing is I go towards the bathroom, out through the fence, and anywhere else. I sort of had a poor attendance. I had a good grade point average. But when I graduated from high school after 4 years, I only had 122 days of attendance. And I wasn't there for all of those. But they weren't doing anything, sitting there listening to somebody read to me out of a book, you know, or what the stuff. And then when they took me out of college prep stuff, they put me in machine shop. I spent a whole year, I built one nut and one bolt. But I did say, nuts, I can do something with this. And later on, when I went to mental hospitals with Virginia and I looked at things, I thought, you know what? If we could get rid of some of the bullshit, the people doing therapy, the psychiatrists, the doctors, the counselors, if they had something they could do that worked, what affects people? And somebody said, Milton Erickson does. So I thought, cool, Gregory Bateson sent me down, and here's this old codger, spooky as the day is long. And I didn't like him, and he did not like me at all, because I am not a patient man. And I went in and I explained it to him, because he started doing all this bullshit. He's like a hypnosis shark. He never stopped. I had a patient once 9 years ago. Gregory Bateson had sent Jay Haley and John Wheatland down. And then he sent me and John Grinder down, you know, some years later, because John Wheatland and Jay Haley went down and went into a trance. They really didn't figure out what he was doing. They just were very good hypnotic subjects. He even switches in the transcript in Jay Haley's book. There's a woman named Sue, and there's a transcript of Milton. And as he goes through, and on about the second page, instead of going, and because they're discussing what he's doing with Sue, and Milton is describing what he does, and in the first page he goes, well, I wanted her to this, and on the second page he's going, and then I told them they could go into a deep trance. And if you look at the transcript, there was no them. The only them could have been Jay Haley and John Wheatland. Whose theory, by the way, is that all communications are relativized to the speaker and the context. So Milton had read his book and knew exactly how to get him. He just relativized everything. He said, now I told Sue, go into a trance. And both of them did. Better than Ernest Rossi, who, in at least he fixed it in his manuscript. He sent it to me. I read it. And at one point, Ernest was a little frustrated. And he said, gee, Milton, I must be the stupidest student you ever had. Milton went, that's right. This was in his book. He sent it to me, and I kind of circled it, and I said, gee, Ernest, I might take this out. But every time he read it, of course, he heard Milton's voice and went into a trance. Me, on the other hand, I took Milton's wheelchair out by the highway, and I said, you come on wheels. I don't. You're a little older than me, and I'm not patient. I don't want all the song and dance. I'm going to ask you to do certain things, and I just want you to do them. That's all. Do you understand? And he went, invariably. And I wheeled him back in, and he said, once some years ago, Gregory Bateson sent two young men to me. One of them was a real asshole. And I said, that's right. But he did some great things. He had great techniques, but he believed that cure meant that you got out of the hospital, you got a job, you got married, you had babies, and you sent him presents. And I'm sorry, I don't believe everybody needs to get married and have children. I think they need to fall in love before they talk about marriage, because if you get married to the wrong people, then you'll just have children and be mean to them. And there's enough of that going on. And what people need to know is how to stay in love, because they keep, you know, you get all these post-hypnotic suggestions when you get married. It's really fucked. People go, well, you better enjoy it now, because as time goes along, you know what, suddenly it's the old ball and chain. And I like the concept, but somehow or other they said it had to be unpleasant. And they said, well, you know, when you first get together, the sex is really good, and then it starts to fade. Well, I've only been married 25 years, so I'm still waiting for that part. But I'll tell you, you know, if you're with the wrong person, the sex starts to fade right away. But if you find somebody that you really love, and you don't believe what people tell you, then you can keep making it better and better and better all the time. Because the happier you are, the happier the people around you will be. You know, and it's done not verbally, not by going up and saying, da 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 da. Although there are a few things all men should know, and this is a real religious thing with me. Guys, when a woman comes up to you and holds up an empty dress, and they're in a dress, and they say, which one do you like? Take the dress with the woman in it. Right? They don't consult you on fashion now, do they? They want you to notice that they look good in what they've picked. They don't want you to go, well, I think maybe the blue one would be better, right? Because they go, so you want the dress without the woman in it. And trust me, if you keep picking that one, you will get it. I live in San Francisco. There's lots of guys in a blue dress. That's why I still wonder about this Clinton thing, you know, with the blue dress and the cum stain on it. I just want to know who was wearing the dress at the time it happened. There are possibilities. You never know. These are wild people in the White House. I remember the pictures, you know, of Bill and Hillary and Tipper Gore in one bus and Al Gore and the press corps in the bus behind. Right? I still have those pictures on the wall because I said these people were swingers from the beginning. You know, and swingers are people that have to organize their extracurricular sex activities. They have rules and times. You do this, then I'll do this. It's more like a football squad. Okay, everybody out. Okay, huddle up now. You go down the front and blow him, and then you go over to the right and you do this. Excuse me, I'm not good at group activities. See, because, you know, to me it's not how much, you know, dessert you have. It's whether it tastes exquisite. And to me, if I'm going to take one bite of something, I want it to be wonderful. I want the smell to be wonderful. I want to make everything as great as I can be. And if I don't like it, I want to negatively hallucinate it as quickly as possible. See, my thing is if things are unpleasant, I disappear them. And I find that works really well for me. Sometimes I just negatively hallucinate whole human beings. They cease to exist for me at all, and that really scares people. You do it with kids, you know, and they call your name and you act like they're not there. They get very unnerved. Well, if you get a group of people to do it with an adult, it's even more powerful. Now, if we could get world leaders to disappear, wouldn't that be fun? Right? We could do things like, you know, organize things by simple concepts, like they do outside the temples in India. Here are people living in squalor and poverty. And you know what impressed me? I gave one of them a little bit of money because the guide with me told me to. Because they told me before, if you give it to the people, they'll tear your Land Rover over and tear you to shreds. Well, that's not those people. The people that are actually living outside the temple, we give it to, they go and buy food and share it with everybody. And these people have less than you could even imagine surviving on. But yet, what they do have is integrity. They may be living in poverty, but you know what? They feel better about themselves than most people because their gods have simple rules. You do the right thing for the right reason. They're not killers of puppies. And if you believe that the one and only almighty God is the same guy that kills puppies, how could anybody kill little cute puppies? The thought of it irates me. This is a fictitious God. Excuse me, you know, if you're talking about people that commit genocide, and look at the people that talk about racial cleansing. Excuse me, let's buy them some mirrors, shall we? You know, I mean, these people, you know, I mean, they've just been so uninformed for so long. I think what we need to do is give them all TVs and cable, right? And after a year of watching cable, they can do the same thing that happened in East Germany. I was there at the time. I grew up, the Berlin Wall was the most horrible thing in the world. Do you know what our President Kennedy did when he went to Berlin and went up and did his little German speech? He got up on the wall and told everybody on the East Germany that he was a jelly donut. That's true. I'm not making this up. He went up. He thought he was saying he was a Berliner, but he didn't say it right. He got up and said, I am a jelly donut. And everybody in the East Germany went. And the KGB was trying to figure out the code behind it, you know. They went nuts trying to figure out, he's a jelly donut. What does this mean, you know? And we were afraid of him. The wall would have never. But I was there, you know. There was no way in the world. I mean, we had total hostilities. And 2 years later, they were having a rock concert on the place where the wall used to be and selling tourists pieces of it. They split a little hole in it, and they let people come through, and they gave them $55 to learn to shop. The first day, 150,000 came through. The next day, 250,000 came through. 3 weeks later, the wall was gone. Because I don't know if any of you have ever been behind the Iron Curtain and tried to go shopping, but let's just put it this way. Don't. I mean, you go to Russia and you go in a store and there's nothing in there, right? But you could go to a place that Russians couldn't go and they had everything, you know, but you had to have American money to buy stuff there. And East Germany, there was nothing, but the TV kept coming across. They kept seeing commercials for Nikes, but they didn't believe it. It was all propaganda. But when they went and saw the stores were full, hey, do you want political ideology or tennis shoes? Tennis shoes. Do you want stores that have food in it, or do you want an ideology? And I'll tell you, people are real simple about this stuff. They go, what was that ideology? I don't seem to remember. Now, you can bait people with religion, or you can make religion so people become better people. And I think that this is what I loved about the Hindus, is that, you know, I had people in India come back and say, I'm sorry, sir, you gave me too much money. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, no, it's only 200, not 2,000, right? Because these ruples, they go by, it's like Italian money. Get the wheelbarrow, buy a pair of shoes, you know? But they would come back and give it back to you, and, you know, and they'd look at you like, you have to be more careful. And the thing is, I asked the driver I had, I said, you know, how come they don't walk off with these people are poor? And they go, well, because it wouldn't be right. And that's just all it took. And you talk about what we're teaching our children, you teach them by what you do. And one of the things that my kids are funny about is they don't steal. And that's because I've had so many opportunities to, and I just won't. And it's not for any other reason other than I believe it will affect me. And it's not about the store, and it's not about anything else. And I used to when I was young, and I'm good at it too, you know. But I stopped doing it when I realized that what was being hurt by it was me. That if I didn't look at things and build things about knowing that things were right and doing them for the right reason, then in terms of personal evolution, I never would. That it takes the certain things that you just have to pay attention to. Like, guys, if a woman looks at you and says, do you think I'm getting fat? Don't pause, okay? Right? They're not really asking you for anything other than one answer, okay? It's not a serious question. It's a rhetorical question. And the truth is, you don't think about it. So if you don't think about it, you know, I mean, it's not really, I don't think every day, you know, gee whiz, what's the weight on the scale? How much does it weigh? I don't care how much it weighs. I only care that I love my wife. And I don't care whether she weighs a little bit. She's been skinny as skinny can be, and she's been all kinds of things. When she was pregnant, she would go, do you think I'm fat? You know, but that's not what I thought. You know, I only thought about what she was doing. And to me, it's like, so all you have to do is say the word no. It's that simple. Don't make a big deal out of things that aren't, and it won't be. You know, it's just like this stuff, like people have always coming up to me and asking me, they're saying, well, you know, I know people get involved in the occult and bad things happen to them. And I say, look, I don't call anybody on the phone I don't want to talk to. If you keep that as a rule of thumb, then you'll have nothing on this planet or any other really to be afraid of. But, you know, if you pick up the phone and you start wondering questions inside your own mind, if you start thinking, what could go wrong, you'll find it. If you start thinking, you know, of all the things that somebody could do that would upset you, pretty soon they'll start doing it. Remember, if yogurt knows yogurt, and we're a more evolved life form, what you think manifests itself in the world around you. And call it coincidence. You know, don't believe in these things. Be an idiot. And these things will come back on you over and over and over again. But on the other hand, the Scientologist says everything that happens to you is your own fault. You brought it on yourself. You got raped, you brought it on yourself. Well, excuse me, when I hear anybody tell me that if something bad happens to me, it's my fault, that means they're not responsible for anything they do to me. So usually what I do is I say, excuse me, I have to go get a pack of cigarettes. I'll be right back and give you my address and phone number. Because I don't want to be around people that don't feel responsible for their own behavior and for how they affect. We are not separate things on the earth. We're made out of it. We're a part of it. When you go into space, you don't generate red corpuscles anymore. That's one of the things they have to do is figure out how to get humans to be able to stay alive when they're not on this planet. Because, you know what? Every one of you's got a different footprint. That seems like an awful waste unless the earth is keeping track of you. Ooh, it's kind of like Santa Claus. Knows if you've been naughty, knows if you've been nice. Because at one point in time, you may discover, well, just what got us into this position. So with that, I want to tell you tonight while you sleep and dream, do a good job of it, because that's when you consolidate the learnings. Your unconscious has been close enough to hear me. They start at 10 tomorrow, true? Yes, okay. Thank you very much. And so come back at 10, and if you have bizarre and unusual dreams tonight, while you rest peacefully, it's okay. You may discover your mind begins to race, but I've discovered you can only teach the conscious mind so much, but the rest of people can learn at an accelerated rate. It's just a question of knowing how to speak to each of both of you. So I'm going to say something, and I want you to take it literally. Good night. Become one, and I'll see you tomorrow. I got rhythm. I do have to say something, but can you turn that up just a little bit? I like to hear myself too. You don't have a cold, do you? Okay, because if you have a cold, you have to sit further back. Because it's if you get sick, it's one thing. If I get sick, you guys are going to have a really boring day tomorrow. I had somebody walk up to me the first day I was in London, and they walked up and they went, "I have a question." Hut-choo! Like that. And they're going to get out of the hospital soon. I did that change of consciousness thing, and then I used them as a demonstration subject. I discovered that when people are really sick and they go out in public and they don't cover their nose when they sneeze, that's about as rude as you can get. Spreading disease around a small conference room which recycles the air means that it can get out of hand. I did a thing in London, and they were nice enough to put it in a conference room in the ceiling of a train station. And since there were so many fumes, they had all the windows sealed closed, and they didn't have any circulating air of any kind whatsoever, because it was built before they had such things. I have to admit, they had nice molding on the wall, and mold to go with it. And there was an epidemic in London. Half the city was shut down because everybody had the flu. And 200 people showed up, jammed themselves in this little room. And when I was walking up to the conference room, all I could hear was coughing, sneezing, and hacking. And I mean, like, you know, an abundance of people. And I thought, uh-oh. So I went out the hotel and I went to the place next door, and there was a little diving shop. And I got myself a diving thing with tanks. And when I came in, and I thought, well, if I have the tanks, I should get the flippers, you know? So I went in with the mask on and the flippers, and I walked in and walked up in front of the audience with the mask on, you know, but I had a cork in the snorkel. And I said, I'd like to welcome you people here. And somebody looked at me like this. The rest of them took it really in stride. They, you know, something about the English that nothing fazes them. It's really something. They go, well, that's nice. And somebody in there was like going, cool, I should get some flippers too, you know? It's like, that's the new thing, man. You're just not in with the in crowd if you don't wear flippers. What they didn't realize is that I had nitric oxide in the tanks. See, when you ask an audience, how many of you here have gone to the dentist and the dentist is giving you laughing gas, nitric oxide? How many of you? Raise your hand. It's a very large number. I had 3,000 people in an audience in London ask that question, and one person raised their hand. Right? And I said, come on, there must be more of you. And that person was an American. See, over there, they, you know, they feel that, well, you know, sure, it hurts, but that's okay. You know, doesn't hurt the dentist. And after all, you know, if you're not fully conscious, Germany is even worse. I mean, Germany, they don't even want to give you Novocaine. My wife had a root canal that flared up when she was there, and she went in and the guy chloroformed her. You know, the thing on the rag? We used to do that to, like, butterflies when I was a kid. We had butterfly collections, and we'd chloroform them. I thought it was a way to kill people, not to put them out for a while. But my wife has a very sturdy metabolism. She came home and wanted to go out and find a place to buy chloroform. And I told her, I said, why? You going out on a date? I know when I was in college, they always said, man, you know, if you really want to get with the girls, he goes, you know, you get them, you give them drugs, man. They'll do anything on drugs. And I went, what, ether? It's really what I want is an unconscious woman, right? You know, one that's like dead, you know, laying there out completely cold, you know. And it seems to me that if you're going to do that, you might as well just go for the rubber doll and just put some sand in it, you know. It amazes me that, and the place that I stay in London, right about three or four streets away, because it's very close to Parliament, three or four streets away, there's a street that has stores that have, well, what I would consider way beyond pornography. I mean, I think people should do anything they want in their homes, but outside these shops, they have things like blow-up sheep. Now, excuse me, but I was walking down there, and I looked, and here they have outside like 15, 20 blow-up sheeps, and, you know, And then they have the windows all covered over so you can't see other things, right? And they might have a few things hanging outside, like, you know, some handcuffs, stuff like that. And I kept looking at them every day when I'd walk by. I'd look down the street, and finally, I'm the kind of guy, I just can't resist doing certain things. I walked in the store, and I said, excuse me, I have to ask this question. Who buys the sheep? Somebody in here is ringing. Or is it? There's another conference room? Oh, goody. Demonstration subjects. That's right. So what we do is we all stand outside their conference room, and when they come out, we form a big line, and you guys practice handshake interrupts one after the other. Just, and they step them by and again. where I wanted to start this morning, I want to show you some things, and I want you to try them. Now, somebody mentioned to me yesterday, they came up and they said, I'm very afraid. And they stopped and went, and I said, excuse me? I said, is this just like a demonstration of fear? Or, you know, is there a question here? And they said, well, I hadn't finished my sentence. And I said, I was hoping that was true. And they said, I'm very afraid that if you ask us to try things, that I won't know what to do. Okay, my idea here is that the reason you came to a seminar where you do learning is because you don't know how to do it. Okay, I'm assuming that. Now, some of you may have because you've been somewhere else, but I figure you're just here for redundancy. The people that don't know what they're doing are the ones that read the brochure properly. My expectation is not that you know how to do it. I'm just asking you to blindly follow instructions. Now, I noticed yesterday I said things like, go inside and think of a time you made a really good decision. Now, today I may ask complicated things, like I may say, make a picture of a red triangle. Now, if you go inside your head and say, what the fuck does he want me to do that for? That's a different exercise, okay? If you try what I'm asking you to, then it's possible, because you see, where you're going to learn is going to be down the road. Suddenly, you're going to realize that if you just do a few things I'm asking you to do, that you're going to figure out how easy it is to use them. Now, one of the first things I want to do is tell you, since there is no such thing as hypnosis, which has been proved, by the way, now scientifically over and over and over again. Of course, when they have people do this, they usually put the hypnotic induction on a tape recorder, set it on a chair, and have somebody go in a room. Now, they proved at Henry Hilgard's labs at Stanford, this is the big hypnosis research place in the world, that certain people can be hypnotized, and other people can be a little more hypnotized, and some people can't be hypnotized at all, right? And they proved this because, number one, their rule says, it is important to use a monotone. Changes in voice tone and voice tempo do not affect the hypnotic process. Therefore, you must talk like a total idiot. What I like is that the tape recording, because I went in there, what amazed me is that some people could get into a trance with the playing. Because some people would go in and they would just go into trance and do every hypnotic phenomenon, in spite of the fact it did the following thing. It said, as you sit there, your eyelids are getting heavier, heavier, and heavier. You're beginning to feel light. And you're getting very, very, very sleepy. And I thought, now, this is a monotone? I asked the guy, I said, is this a monotone? And he said, yes, relatively, it's a monotone. And I said, well, have you ever had anybody that totally flunked this and couldn't go into trance and do any hypnotic phenomenon? And the guy said, well, yeah, Henry Hilgard is a zero on the scale. He's completely unhypnotizable. Now, I knew Henry and his son, by the way, from a different place, and I knew this guy spent almost all of his life in trance. The hardest thing to do was to get his attention. He would be there staring at a crack in the pavement, and you'd go, Henry, Henry, can I have your car? No, no, I don't want to borrow it. I want you to give it to me. And he'd turn around and say, yeah, yeah, sure, anything you need. And I'd go, the pink slip. And he'd go, for what? And I'd say, this guy is, well, let's just say, he was an intellectual. He was in there thinking about things, about thinking about things. But he wasn't in a trance. Even though when I lifted his arm up, it stayed that way. He wasn't catalepsy. He just forgot to put it down. Now, I'm going to ask you to start. We're just going to try a little thing because I want you to have what I have that most people don't. You see, I don't place much faith in religions, and I don't place much faith in science. I don't place much faith in theories at all, because theories are what I refer to as primarily the fudge factor and the finagle phenomenon. They explain to you why you can't do what you want to be able to do until somebody figures out how to do it. Remember, they said you'd never be able to break the sound barrier at one time. Now, one day, Chuck Yeager was sitting there, and he was kind of pissed off because he didn't get to go on one of the space shots. They picked the other people and not him. So he went out and got in a plane and just did it. Right? Now, scientifically, they had proved when you broke the sound barrier, that was it. Boom. Plane would explode. And yet, we see things moving faster than sound all the time. And scientists even knew it. Electricity goes faster than the speed of sound. Photons themselves move at the speed of light, surprisingly. And they don't blow up. But he just thought about it. He went up and he just did it. And then after that, well, then it was Mach 1, Mach 2. Have any of you ever flown the Concorde to London? What a great plane. Isn't that wonderful? You get on this thing and you go, right? You have lunch and bam, you land there, right? Of course, anything under you on the way has been shattered. But they have a new idea, which I think is very cool. You guys know the Earth spins, right? Okay. Well, some people think the universe spins. They go, look at the stars moving in the sky. They're not moving. You are. Now, the neat thing is the Earth is spinning at 25,000 miles per hour. And most people feel nothing. It makes me dizzy. But then I walk around with a compass all the time because I like to know where I am on the Earth ever since I found out the magnetic fields don't look like they do on a globe. They're actually totally different. And there are places where they have epicenters, and like the Bermuda Triangle's a little weird. But there's probably nothing to that. It's just one of those coincidences we're talking about. And I also found out that there are all kinds of strange phenomena that occur because the actual pole of the Earth spinning and the magnetic pole they're not in the same place. They're in different places on the Earth. So the magnetic fields are spinning like this, and the Earth is spinning this way. Now, to me, this can account for a lot of things. For example, Eskimos don't get jet lag. Even if you bring them right here for 5 years, put them on a plane, and take them anywhere, and back and forth and back and forth, they just don't get jet lag. Now, whatever it is in us that's able to perceive the changes in where we are in the Earth, because it's not the time that does it. It's not the time zone. It's taking a human and moving them across the Earth very rapidly to another place where the magnetic fields are different and everything's different. Where the Eskimos live, close to the poles, the magnetic fields are all crunched together and much more intense. They're strongest at the poles, and then they go up and into the equator and out from the equator into the other pole. Now, if you take a metal magnet, right, and a piece of metal that looks exactly the same, put them on a table and ask people, I'm going to give you both of these. Can you tell me which one? They look exactly the same. One is a magnet and one is just metal. And they say, you have to leave them on the table. You can't put any other metal there. Can you tell me which one is which? And people go, and they put them together and they go. And they spend hours doing this. When if they knew what magnetism looked like, they would know, well, gee, if you hold the magnet up like this and you stick the metal, it'll stick. But in the middle, it doesn't stick, because there's no magnetic force when it goes in and goes out, just like it is at the equator on the Earth. And see, that's one of the things why, the reason you get the light show on the poles, like the Aurora Borealis, right? Because see, I had this idea that we take a big wire, stick one in the North Pole, one in the South Pole, and bring them around to New York City and then light up the country. Because what a generator is any piece of metal moving in a magnetic field. And I kept going, the Earth. Now, it turns out it wasn't an original idea. I found out a guy named Tesla, before his death, went into a valley, stuck in bars this big, 10 feet by, about 100 of them, not connected together in any way, about 15 feet apart in some strange configuration. And the last two he had wires coming out of that went into a volt ohm meter, and it was generating enough electricity that he could have powered the western half of the United States. And the next day, people came out with measuring things, and there was about 3,000 stakes in the ground, because he'd already been robbed before of patents. Tesla, an interesting guy, and this is part of how design and human engineering started, is when I read about him, he was a mystery, because here's a guy that invented most of the things, alternating current. Edison said he invented the light bulb, but Tesla just happened to work for him at the time. He invented fluorescent lights. He invented the electric generator, just a few things, and hundreds of other things that he had the patent on. Now, he had in his mind, he actually describes it this way. He said, what I'd do is I'd go inside my mind, right? And I had a set of tools there and a workbench. And what I could do is he could give him the plans to an electric motor. He would look at the plans, go inside his mind, pick up an identical set of plans and tools, and build in his mind an electric motor. He would go and build one on the outside, and he would start them both simultaneously. And then he would go away and come back a month later, go inside the one in his mind, take it apart, and measure the wear, and it would be identical when somebody else tore apart the other motor. Now, this is what I call having precision. You see, we're going to build some things, because I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you put a few more switches other than pain off and on and whine off and on, complain off and on, and of course, when you open the doorway, it trips the feel bad switch to start with. Then I notice there are a lot of people that what they do is they try and figure out what to feel bad about. That's why the first day I give them lots of things. I go down a big list. I go, let's see, what sacred cows exist? Religion, politics, everything, you know. Whatever's sacred, I want people to be able to look at it and have enough of a sense of humor to realize these things are not real. It's only a way of talking about them. And as soon as you have to feel bad about an idea, then the next thing is you feel bad enough about it that you kill somebody. I remember being a kid crossing the state line for the first time and being so unimpressed. I went, where is it? You know, I was in New Jersey. On the map, it was green. That's kind of pushing it anyway. But then when I crossed the line, New York was supposed to be orange. It wasn't orange. It wasn't any different at all. Although the people did speak somewhat differently. You know, it's like if you're in Toronto, people go, what you doing, eh? And if you're in New York, they go, hey, what you doing? Just kind of a cultural thing. Now, what I wanted to do is, see, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you actually could do, I worked in a recording studio, and wouldn't it be neat, because Tesla, right, had to wait a whole month and go and take that motor apart. Now, the way in which he invented things is he decided what he wanted to be different. He thought, wouldn't it be cool if people could fly instead of taking a carriage somewhere or a train? So he went in and he built a reality, and he actually went into a plane. They didn't have planes yet. Okay, keep this in mind. I mean, it's a long time ago. They had little ones that would go, you know, that sort of thing. But he went in his mind, went into ones that had like 50 people in them, flew out in the air, and he did this, you know, every day for 2 hours. He'd go inside his mind and take a trip somewhere. And then finally, he walked out and he took one of the engines apart. I took the cover off, took his tools, measured everything, drew a set of plans. Then he went and built one on the outside. And before they built planes that would fly, that didn't look like something that was like a science fiction project, you know, I meant for more than a few minutes, this guy designed and built a jet engine. And it would have worked, except for one little mistake. At that time, they knew gravity went down, but they believed air pressure went sideways. And it doesn't. It goes at 45-degree angle. And that's the only thing. You can spin it. It's got the ball bearings. And it looks exactly like jet engine. And it kind of almost starts and runs. Now, if he'd have done that, we would have started with jets. And there wouldn't be all these propeller planes around crashing into hillsides all the time. People are always going, I have a plane. I'll fly you up there. Right. That's what I want to do. Take a lot longer to be in a plane. Right, with somebody that I don't trust to think, let alone fly. I'm in a big aircraft, I know the plane can fly without the pilot. This reassures me. I know this because I was on one that took off from Dallas. 45 minutes later, it turned around and went back. And then the guy turned it around, and it kept doing that for like 6 hours. We kept going forward and backwards and forward and backwards. And the guy couldn't get the computer. He said, there's something wrong. It just, every time, you know, we reprogram it, it goes and pulls back the same program. Finally, he gave up and landed in Dallas, and a plane crashed where we were going. And I went, thank you. I don't know what got us this far, but I'll settle for that. Now, to me, I think when I was in the plane, 747 one time, I went into the cockpit, and I went, wouldn't it be neat if this was my brain? I said, you know, why have all these little tiny pictures? I ask people, think of something you believe strongly. I know everybody here believes the sun is going to come up tomorrow, right? Well, actually, the earth turns. The sun just kind of sits there. But if you didn't believe that, you wouldn't be in a seminar to learn things you could use in the future. If you thought the world was going to end today, you go, there's no one. Today is the last day on earth, so I think I'll learn something I can use tomorrow. That's what I call a really bad strategy. those are those people that go, when I retire, then I'll be happy. And when they retire, they have a heart attack. Right, and also they have no idea how to be happy because they've never tried it. So they sit around and go, Now, after they've rearranged the backyard 55 times, repainted the house, did their sock drawer, and tried to enjoy some things, which I find really difficult. People tried to teach me to play golf, and I'm sorry, I just don't chase the ball. I got them to explain it to me, and I said, so after I hit it here, then I go there and stuff, and then we end up over on this last 18th green over here. I said, you guys are really going the long way. Just take the ball and go like that, right? And you know what? The holes are too small. That's what I think. You're going to hit the ball, and that's way too small. I brought a shovel with me, too. You dig a little trench up to the hole, too, the ball goes right in. And I'll tell you another thing. I ain't carrying that many clubs anywhere. You know, excuse me. They said, well, you can get a caddy. I'm not making anybody else carry them that far either. I said, one club will be enough. And these guys said, you're not taking this seriously. And I went, well, yeah, I am. In my own way. I just took the putter and a welding torch. Modified it a little bit. Made it into something that I could run up and do the kind of the same thing you do when you're riding a horse and you play hockey on it. They call it polo, but if you get enough leverage, and I had done a lot of martial arts, so I took this thing and I went pow and hit it on the back side of the putter so that all that weight was behind it. And because they said I had to go all the way down to this green, and they said it'll take me 3 or 4 times to hit it down there if I can tee off. And I was pretty teed off right at that moment. And when I hit it, it went, flew right down there and landed 2 inches from the little flag. And I went, damn, I missed. And these guys looked at each other and they said, you know, you didn't do that right. And I said, I don't do anything right. You know what? They've always told me, you know what? You're some kind of a wise guy. Now, where I came from, that had a different meaning. But I said, well, if you think so, but I do have relatives that do that sort of thing. You know, I have an uncle, and he's not a real uncle, but everybody calls him that. And, you know, when he asks you to do something, you just do it because the consequences are, well, let's just say they're not something you want to consider. He said, I'd like you to come over here and bring your band with you and play for 17 hours. We're going to have a party all night. And all those other bands take breaks. You guys don't need to do that, do you? And we went, no, sir. Because everybody that was in his house had bulges under their coats, and we knew those weren't Coke bottles. But, you know, that you had to do whatever you did when you were young. I didn't mind that they did what they did as long as it didn't hurt me. That's my policy. But some people get hurt with ideas because they find out other people are different. Ooh. For example, Buddhists. I mean, what a philosophy. They say, well, I'd like you to learn about Buddhism because being a Buddhist, you know, will help you to understand the universe. And I went, I'll go for that. There's too many people out there that go, boo, hiss. I don't like that. Everything is determined. See, to me, what I like about Buddhism is they've got cool temples. When I went to India, I looked around, and India's got all the really great temples. I came back to the U.S., and we don't have hardly any temples. Right? I mean, there's kind of one down in, you know, the outside, you know, area place, but it's just kind of pathetic compared. Here are these countries, and they told me they were so poor, but they have the palatial temples, and we don't have any, unless you count the Bethel temple, you know, of the split-off section of the Christian church of they can't get along with anybody. Because, and I'm from California, when, you know, and it's not that people from California are really more liberal, it's that they're more rigid about weirder things. And a lot more of them, but intolerant? Whoa! What do you mean? You know, and see, for example, when I got a copy of the Book of Mosman, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, the Book of Mosman, when I opened it up and saw the chapter about the war between the daughters of Jehovah and the Egyptians, I went, that's different. I haven't read this book. And then I turned it, and it comes complete, and it was written in the 1850s. It comes complete with star charts. And it has stars in there that we shouldn't have known about, by the way. I don't know how they knew that. I guess they were cheating. They didn't have telescopes, and yet they knew about constellations ahead of time. They could see things they weren't supposed to see with the naked eye, so I guess it was closed. However, they have it all in the right place. So I began to think, this was inspired by somebody who was intuitive, right? Because whoever did this laid out foundation for a group of people in Los Angeles to come completely fanatic, right? Because they renumbered the dates and everything. And so I thought that, you know, this was just a rare thing and there weren't that many of these people, and there isn't. But they're adamant about it. It's like they go, yes, first there was Jesus, you know, and there was Buddha, and there was Allah, and then Mosman came. And Mosman, by the way, was in New Jersey in the 1850s, and he was somebody that, you know, didn't go with the Mormons and didn't go with anybody. He was just kind of a degenerate, you know, person who sat around and fantasized, but then one day he had a religious conversion and founded his own religion. And sure enough, you can find people. Think about it, Heaven's Gate. And I mean, this was not a very charitable. The idea is that they got serious about this stuff. These people said, oh yeah, for an idea, we'll kill ourselves right now. In fact, we'll do it together. And if you're not willing to, then we'll help you. That's the Jonestown Kool-Aid, anyone? To me, whenever it gets to the point, see, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I mean, suicidals always, these people leave, things. I had one person who had 17 suicide attempts, right? And they were getting suicidal again, and their therapist was, called up and said, I'm afraid he's going to kill himself while he's my patient. I thought, that's kind of a selfish attitude, you know? So I said, well, send him up. I said, I'll get this all over with right away. And the guy came in and sat down, and I said, 17 suicide attempts? I said, you're not very good at this, are you? And I said, so I'm going to help you out. And I opened my desk drawer, and I pulled out a Bowie knife about this fucking big that somebody had given me in a seminar. They were thinking, weren't they? They even had the NLP logo inscribed in it. And it's about this big, and it's a blood, terrible thing, right? But it even has a plaque that it mounts on the wall, but I just really didn't want to have a big Bowie knife on the wall. NLP cuts through all your problems. But anyway, it seemed like the right device for the thing, and I pulled out a rope with one of those hangman's nooses on it, right? And the room, I was out in the country, and my office had big high rafters, about three stories high. Threw that sucker up over there. Got a really kind of unstable wooden chair that had been sitting outside for a few years. Put it in the middle, and I said, come here. Turn around, I'm going to tie your hands. And he said, well, what are you doing? And I said, you've never seen this before. You really don't know much about suicide, don't you? And he goes, well, he said, I'm not going to hang myself. And I said, no, you're not going to have to. You'd fuck it up. I'm going to do it. I said, your psychiatrist called up and said, you had 17 attempts, and could I help you? And so I said, sure, I can help anybody do anything, you know. I'm a very helpful sort of guy, you know. And I said, and I just want to tell you, if for some reason it doesn't snap your neck right away, I've got this knife here, and I'll cut you so that you just bleed, and every drop will come right out, you know. And I've got a bucket here, so don't stain the carpet or anything. And by the way, you know, it makes really good stuff for painting posters, too, for the little things we do on the weekends. But we'll get to that later. And then I went and opened a curtain at the end of my thing, and there was this big stone altar, right, and a big skeleton's head and big goblets. And I took the goblets and I poured in, actually was just a chemical, but it looked good because it was filled with dry ice in there, and suddenly this steamy stuff came out. And I took it and I went blah, 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 like this, and I put it down and turned around and looked at him like this. Are we ready now? And he went, well, wait just a fucking minute here. And I said, well, no, wait a minute. You said life was not worth living. And he went, well, yeah. And I said, that was you 5 minutes ago, right? And he went, well, yeah. And I said, so, well, let's get it the fuck over with, shall we? And I said, I'll try to make it as, well, painful as possible. And I said, oh, no, painless. I get those so mixed up, you know. First it's your, you know, it's your left hand, and then it's your right. You know, do you see my point, by the way? You know, you always get a yes like that. You know how I hate no for an answer? Because I always like to, when I negotiate, I go, well, are you ready to sign this contract? Do you see my point? They go, yeah. And I go, here. Sign that. Feel good. Now, reach involuntarily to your wallet and say, was that a good decision? And then say, it's too late. But anyway, he got really pissy with me. Here, I'm just trying to be helpful. He said, no, wait a minute. He goes, I'm not just going to kill myself right now. And I said, well, look, you've been trying this for 5 years. I said, I think it's about time, you know, we just made it simple. I said, okay, if this seems too sloppy to you, I've got the perfect thing. And I reached in the drawer and I pulled out this weird thing with wire, and it had a glass tube, and then it had two things that you like hook on a car battery. And I plugged it in, and the tube has the thing that goes And I held the things, and I went like this, and he goes, big crack of electricity. And I said, this will do it. And he said, what is that? And I said, well, this is how we barbecue meat up here. I said, let me show you something. And I pulled out a chicken, you know, not a live chicken, but, you know, one you get at the supermarket. And I hooked those things on, and it went, and it was just burnt to a crisp. There wasn't anything there but a pile of ashes. Right. Actually, it was a trick. It was a chicken skin with ashes in it. But I was just trying to make a point. Right. And the guy went, oh, my God. And I said, no, but close. And he said, what the devil's going on here? And I said, getting warmer. I said, look, if you want to kill yourself, then let's get it over with. I said, but if you're trying to tell me that there's some reason why you should stay alive, well, I'd sure like to hear it, because everything you said about your life, it sounded just like a piece of fucking shit. You have nothing to live for. And he went, oh, yes, I do. He said, you know, I really enjoy visiting my kids, for example. And I said, yeah, but don't you depress them? I mean, they go, here's my dad. He's here, but his life sucks. You know, here I'm going to do and go home and say, well, my dad can't even commit suicide. Right? Plus, they're going to have to think if he does it again, I'm going to have to be scared again and feel bad. You don't want to keep putting them through this. Let's get it over with. What do you say? And he went, well, there's, you know, it's possible that I could change. And I said, excuse me? What are you going to change? And he said, well, my psychiatrist said you could help me to change. And I said, I am trying to help you to change. I said, for example, when you look into the future, what do you see that just makes it so that you get excited and feel good? And I know it was probably the thought of getting out of my office. But he stopped. By the way, a weird thing, I was watching a movie this morning, and Morgan Freeman says to this guy, he goes, I know you're lying. And the guy goes, I'm not lying. And he said, I saw your eyes move up and to the right. I know that was a lie. What do you think he's been reading? I like that when you find that stuff's leaking around everywhere. You realize I sat in a little house with a leaky roof, right, and thought about things and wrote them down. And then I gave it a name so that people wouldn't bother me. And then pretty soon there were so many people doing it, they got mad at me for wanting to do new things. They said, now, wait a minute. What you're doing now, that's not NLP. So finally I said, okay, it's not. It's PHE. See, I didn't want to have people go inside and do reframing because it scared me. People would say, go inside and ask yourself if the part of you responsible for being such a fucking idiot would talk to you. And people go, okay. And I go, I'll wait here. And they go. And I just go, what happened? And they go, I don't know. And I go, what the hell were you doing in there then? And they go, well, I asked the question, and then all kinds of things happened. And I said, like what? And they went, like my heart started to beat really fast. And I said, well, go in and ask if that's the part of you that's making you do this. Have it beat your heart again really fast. And they go, oh, it worked. Right? Well, guess what? The reason we had to do that is because everybody was so afraid of hypnosis that if we said this is yes and this is no, just like I did with the guy yesterday, they'd go, ooh, it's devil worship. No, it isn't. It's just asking. That's all. If you, all of you is your conscious mind, just think. That means your conscious mind wants a bug in your eye because it's the unconscious part that blinks, right? That means that when you begin to shiver and chatter your teeth, you're doing that on purpose. You know, that it means that all of these things that like when you blush, when you really didn't want to, that means that you did it on purpose. So actually, there's more than one of you. That's how we get that Freudian thing where there's a little pervert inside of each of us, right? Going around envying penises and wanting to fuck your mother and having edible complexes and all of this and getting stuck at the breastfeeding developmental stage and knowing for a fact that if you have fish in your dreams, it's about breastfeeding. Excuse me, you know, I'm a Pisces. It may not be that way. I do like sucking on breasts, but, you know, I don't really think that that implies that if there's a fish in your dream. I mean, to me, that as soon as people start doing this kind of stuff, the word I use is crazy as a fucking loon. That's the phrase I like to use. Because to me, as soon as you start knowing what everything means, you end up like one of my clients who got meaningful messages off of license plates. And this is before we had personalized plates. Right. And he was writing them down and talking to people about it, and they said, we're going to put this guy in a mental hospital. Now, I don't think taking a guy like that, putting him in a mental hospital with other crazy people, is going to give him a handle on reality. I'm just sorry. You know, that's like putting criminals all together, dressing them up in jeans and shirts and making them look tough and having them weight lift every day is really going to make it so that they're genuinely nice people. You know, it's a terrifying environment where they have to suffer homosexual rape and fear every day of all kinds of things, you know, and it really doesn't teach you to go out in the world and be a kinder, better person. You know, it doesn't make you want to get a job. It just makes you afraid. The longer you're there, the more institutionalized you get. It wasn't a good idea. See, to begin with, if they must put them there, they should have them wear pink tutus. It'd be really hard to walk up in ballerina slippers and a pink tutu, you know, and a little chiffon veil, and maybe a little pearls or something, and walk up to somebody and go, okay, you, I'm the leader of this gang. Especially if we televised it to their neighborhoods. There should be the neighborhood prison channel where you get to see the latest production of Swan Lake. It'd be really tough to come out and they said, well, you did your time, you're a tough guy, and by the way, those pirouettes were much better this time. You know, when you went up for burglary, you know, then you only got to be in the modern dance class. But, you know, if you're doing hard time, you get to do ballet, because ballet takes a lot of concentration. And I really think that when people are paroled, that, you know, that for a while they should have to wear that pink tutu. Because there's just something about being in a pink tutu that I think would make it so you really didn't want to walk into a liquor store and pull out a 38. Well, pull out where it's going to come from. You know, so you go and you go, okay, I'm so intelligent, I want you to give me all the money you have at a store that might have $20 in it. These guys don't, I was thinking that they didn't rob the jewelry store. They didn't go to any place where there was any money. They went in a place that has maybe $20 in, that's like robbing a taxi cab, right? Oh yeah, there's bound to be a fortune there, you know. Maybe enough to get one more hit of something that should have been heroin before you throw up. Not smart. Now, why do people take drugs again? My favorite one being cocaine. I got a client, you'll like this, who, after he had been chased by demons in the desert for 3 days, had locked himself in a hotel. I was doing a seminar like this, and the manager of the hotel came in and said, can you help me? There's a crazy person tearing a room apart. Well, I went up, and sure enough, I could hear him screaming and yelling in there, right? And I said to the guy, I said, is there anybody in there with him? And he went, no. He said, but his car is brand new BMWs in front of the thing. It's covered with dirt and mud. And I started listening, and I heard him scream, get away from me! And I heard this big crash. And I thought, well, I could get his attention. And I said, go away. And I went up to the door, and I tapped really lightly. And I went, help! And the noise inside stopped. I went, help! Somebody came over and went, is there somebody out there? And I went, yes! I'm so frightened, help! The guy opened the door this much, and his eyes were this big around. And I said, please let me in, it's too scary out here, I'm too frightened. And he opened the door and grabbed me and yanked me in and slammed the door, and I looked and there's glass everywhere. And I said, oh, the glass on the floor. And he said, yeah. He said, I was walking into the bathroom and I turned and there was somebody there, so I hit him. Oops, it was the mirror. Well, this guy was a little wound up, so I said, suddenly I looked around and I ran over and I went, there's someone behind the drapes, behind the drapes, behind the drapes. He ran over and he ripped the drapes open and I went, no, no, not there, not there, under the bed, look quick, under the bed. And he ran and he looked under the bed and he went, there's nobody there. And I went, in the drawer, look in the drawer. And he opened the drawer and there's nobody there. And I said, under the matchbook. And he picked up the matchbook and I said, now, do you really think there's going to be a person under a matchbook? And he looked at me like this and I said, I have a guess. You're high as a motherfucking kite, aren't you? And he went, and I said, you've been high before too, haven't you? And he went, and I said, well, you know you're going to come down, but now would be a really good time because the police are on their way. And if they come in and arrest you and take you to jail, you're going to be this high, handcuffed in a cell with some guy named Bert who just got here from Alabama, who's going to look at you and go, you're a mighty sweet young thing. And he looked at me and went, oh, shit. And I said, that's right, hold that thought. And I said, now, I want to ask you some questions. I said, what the hell did you take that got you this high? And he said, well, I mixed PCP and speed, like one wasn't enough. Then he injected it into his veins for days. And that's D-A-Z-E. And suddenly he began to notice things out of his peripheral vision that were chasing him. And suddenly he turned around and something that looked like a demon was there. And he jumped in his car and he drove away and he looked in the rearview mirror and it was still there. Everywhere he looked, it was still there, this thing, you know. And he said, I said, what color was it? And he said, it was black. And I said, so's your hair. And he went, you don't think it was my hair, do you? And I said, I don't know, but I can tell you this, it'd be a lot easier to know if you weren't this stoned. And he said, well, what am I going to do? And I said, well, the police are going to be here, and I have to tell you something. When they get here, I'm leaving. Because, after all, I don't want to go to jail with you. But I tell you what, if you just tell them you had a fight with your girlfriend, you'll pay for the damages and are totally straight. But I said, you're too high to do that. I said, so come here. He walked over, and I said, what's your name? Told him to look at the changing focus of his eyes. Suddenly, his hand got closer to his face, and the moment he felt it touch his face, he would suddenly have a rush of adrenaline. It's one of the best drugs there is. You ever been kind of high, had a few drinks or something, and suddenly something scared you? Right? You got really scared, and then suddenly you were really alert, and you weren't high anymore. Something like maybe a policeman's red light. For example, your mother coming home. I had friends. I lived by myself when I was in high school, but I had friends that they would come in and they would be like shaking like a leaf, and they'd go, oh man, I was smoking hash in my bedroom listening, you know, to Iron Butterfly, and I didn't realize my mother came in, right? And she cleaned out the ashtray next to my bed and told me if I didn't get that pipe cleaned, right, it was going to jam up just like my father's, and walked out of the room, right? And I thought, I wonder if she knew what it was. So he went and asked her, did you know that was hash and pipe and not tobacco? That was not smart. This is a decision made on drugs, not off drugs.